Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Purpose Tune Podcast. The goal of my show is to create valuable content to broaden your knowledge, inspire you, and get you in the right mindset so that you can apply it in your own life to drive impact, generate meaning, and achieve your purpose.
Now, today's guest is Dan Neitz. Dan is the founder of CORE, which is Latin for heart. Dan is a speaker, facilitator, and coach. And he essentially has one premise in his work. We are all in this life for a reason. Dan's background includes engineering, sales, psychology, and a near-death experience in 2015. Across an array of settings, Dan helps clients better realize the potential in themselves and their teams. Dan, thank you so much for hopping into this today's lovely show. And how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm great. I appreciate you having me here. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, I am as well. Thank you so much. I'd love to tap into your work as well as your background, and even maybe perhaps have you share a bit of details about your near-death experience of 2015 that really sprung things to where they are now. And so, but before we go into that, how would you describe yourself?
You know, that's an interesting question. So I'll be turning 50 this year. So I would describe myself as middle-aged, but grateful actually for the aging process. You know, it's been interesting to trade my physical faculties. Like, I'm wearing reading glasses now. Metabolism is definitely slower. There's all those little things that you got to give back, but what you get is like this super integrating experience. I guess if you're looking for it, I don't know that it's guaranteed, but I'm now able to see so much more clearly since we're talking about purpose, like how all these different chapters in my life actually were what needed to be happening at the time, even though in the midst of it, you couldn't necessarily connect the dots in a purposeful way. So how would I describe myself? Humble, grateful, father of two, really grateful for that, married as well. Yeah, and I think a student of life, I would say that is to kind of put a button or a bow on, describe myself.
Yeah. That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So I know your work is on purpose and you help people, business leaders, really define what their purpose is and get them on this journey. And how would you define purpose and how does it show up in your work?
Yeah, you know, so I sort of, from a vocabulary perspective, I don't actually often use the word purpose, though I love it and it's close to my heart. One of the ways I try and help us think differently about our purpose and make it a little bit more practical sometimes is I use the premise, you know, we're all in life for a reason. And where I get to in saying that is, like, you know, if you think about it, right, we're doing a podcast today. There's a reason we're doing it. And there's a reason we're doing it on Zoom. And there's a reason that, you know, you have built your body of work around the subject of purpose. And there's a reason I got this shirt on and this haircut and all these other details. And if you just spend time with it, like, how do we then, you know, get to this place where, like, well, there's a reason for everything that I can literally see in this moment, like every, you know, paint choice in this room, you know, the fact that there's no clouds in the sky today, yada, 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 but there's no reason that I am here. And, you know, my journey has included, you know, 20 plus years of selling, technical selling, master's in psych and a counseling background. And I just feel like I've always, without realizing it as a younger person, been studying motivation, studying what drives people, trying to line up with that. And the near death, which we'll talk about in a bit, I'm sure, you know, is a big catalyst for really cementing that perspective. But I think we're all in life for a reason. And our purpose is to discover that reason. And what we discover as we begin to take our own purpose seriously is that we'll never really realize our purpose without serving others. And so purpose to me, you know, the purpose of life is to realize the reason we're here. There's a lot of different ways to say that. And we'll only really realize that through serving others. So life's just about figuring out the ways that you love to serve and then go do it.
I love that. So when you say figuring out what is it that we love doing and do it more and serve, how do people who are struggling with finding their passion, how do we get them to find what is their passion so that they can be more, so that they can do more of that?
Yeah, awesome question. You know, here's the interesting thing. We actually have really good clarity, I think, most of us. And yet I think a lot of people would say, I don't know what my purpose is, or I'm just not sure how to find it. And, you know, one of the phrases that I'll use in my work is values is to me another way to think about purpose. It's like all these different cousins. We got purpose, we've got, you know, mission, we've got, you know, the reason I'm in life, we got values. But I say we don't choose our values, we surrender to them. You know, we are already living our purpose to some degree. It's a matter of how conscious we are of it. And I'm reminded of the Declaration of Independence. The second sentence is, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, which is an interesting invitation to consider, right? That we don't need term papers, or we don't need, you know, some newscast, or we don't need anybody else to tell us when we feel alive. It's self-evident. We know it. And yet the big piece of life is moving from this place of taking the environment's opinion about what is purposeful, what everybody else thinks that we should be doing, that all seems very reasonable. And then over time, more successively honoring what clearly feels good to us on the inside. I mean, that's a long journey, but that's, you know, as we begin to take our own purpose more seriously, that's what we begin to figure out is like, wow, it doesn't matter what anybody else says. It's really about what is my truth? Where do I feel most alive? And all those things are self-evident. You just know. You know, it's hard to trust it, but you know it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So earlier you made a point about we don't choose our values. We're born with it. Is that correct?
I think we come into life, you know, like we can see people coming into life with temperament in their personalities. And I'll also just say for the listener's sake, everything I'm sharing today and anytime I ever speak, it's always an invitation. It's like when you're going to a clothing store, you're trying on different outfits or whatever with no pressure to buy. So, you know, my observation of, you know, thousands of hours of, you know, therapist work and over decades, right, of trying to align with sales clients and their motivations is there's very specific things that are independent of our personality that we're constantly reaching for if we choose to pay attention. So, you know, when you see these value exercises, which a lot of companies do, and they say, all right, here's 50 values up on the wall. Once you pick the ones that really feel good, I'm like, well, that's not really how it works. I mean, it can illuminate, I guess, ways to label your values, but we're already living our values. I mean, it's literally what's happening. So it's just a matter of like looking at the moments in life that have felt the best and where we feel most alive and be like, oh, what's the value at the heart of that thing? It's pretty easy to connect the dots, actually. And part of what I'm trying to do with my life and the subject of purpose is, you know, there's important work being done, like in a theoretical sense by like physicists, those kind of folks. My undergrad is in engineering. So the engineer wants to take all that great theory and turn it into something practical that people can use right now. We need the physicists, we need the theory, and then we also need, you know, a block of people that can translate that into something that we can use, you know, lawnmowers or instruments, whatever it is. And so I'm trying to do that myself personally around purpose, to take these things that feel theoretic and esoteric and lofty and just unattainable in so many ways, and yet be like, wait a minute, it's happening right now. Here's where it is, like right now in the moment. Let's just look at it, you know?
Right. Can you share with us like maybe one or two examples of how you're able to take a concept such as meaning or purpose and help your client go through that process?
Sure. Yeah. So I rely on a couple of key images that I, you know, it took me a while to distill it out, but like one, think of yourself like a light bulb. I do this just about every time I speak. Now, I invite everybody that I'm sharing with, I invite all my clients that I work with individually to consider themselves like a light bulb, because I have this principle that I call conductivity. Mm-hmm. So if you think about the light bulb, when the values that the light bulb was designed for are flowing through it, right, then the light bulb lights up. And so you're, in my estimation, a conductor. I'm a conductor. Everybody listening to this podcast is a conductor of some particular set of values. So you want to start thinking like when I'm really lit up, and again, that's self-evident. The introvert, right, doesn't necessarily bounce off the walls like I would as an extrovert. But on the inside, they know when they feel alive. And what we can take to the bank, at least my research and all the work that I've done, is that that's when your values actually are flowing through you into the world in some positive way. That's what is giving you the aliveness feeling. So I'm always inviting people to think about themselves as a light bulb and think about what they're trying to conduct in the moment. So that's one example.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. So about your near-death experience 2015, which is not too long ago. First of all, what was it, if you don't mind sharing, and how did that change you?
Yeah, so it was actually 6 years ago, last week on the 12th, so we're kind of close to that anniversary. So last week was I did a lot of reflection and try and honor that day each year. I was living in San Francisco at the time, and I had some friends who are really fast on bikes. They're bicycle racers. I'm a former racer. Can't hold a candle to any of the guys that I rode with, but I still trained hard to be able to hang out with them on some fun rides. And one ride we always did was from Carmel on the coast down to Cambria, or just past San Simeon. So just, you know, essentially the best 100 miles you could ride a bike, in my opinion. And so I put in a lot of time on the bike to be ready to hang out with these guys for that ride. And I got a saddle sore, which is pretty normal in cycling, not a big deal. So I actually called the doctor on a Monday, and I was hoping they had some sort of cream, you know, they put on it or whatever, just to kind of get to go down for the ride that was going to be that Friday. And doctor, said, no, you got to come in, but we got an opening this afternoon. So I made that appointment like 8 a.m. on a Monday. About noon, I developed a tremendous fever and chills and all these just symptoms. It was really uncomfortable. I got to the doctor about 3. They looked at me and they're like, oh, yeah, you got the flu, you know, so you should just go home and rest or whatever. But what actually happened was I had sepsis. And it's not something that you would normally test for, right? So I don't really hold a grudge that they kind of missed something rather big. So I went home, suffered like, I can't even tell you, through the night. I remember saying to myself, like, oh my God, this hurts so badly. I mean, just this global pain through the whole body, because sepsis is a blood infection, right? So your whole body is now infected. I was like, I feel like I'm dying, man. When in fact, I was actually really dying. So I had an interesting moment in that suffering that sort of made me realize just for a moment, like, wait a minute, I don't think this is the flu. I don't even know how I would know to think it. And I stumbled out of the house. I got in the car in my boxers. I, you know, rolled my way through the city and pulled up on the curb at the hospital. I got in, but then collapsed. They ended up losing me in the ER. Did a bunch of stuff to get me back, which hurt. I mean, the whole thing just hurt like crazy. It was like a PhD in physical suffering, which I hope to never return to. But, and I'm sure you've had other guests like this where something really sucky happens in their life. But then now that you're on the backside of it, you're like, thank goodness. Because prior to that moment, you know, I had just been dabbling in many ways in my purpose. I had real clarity around, I love to mentor and coach and guide people. I spent a lot of time tutoring and mentoring in any school district that I had lived in. So I was doing that in San Francisco. And it was sort of like, you kind of got your purpose fix outside of work. But my heart, like, I wanted to be doing it at work all the time. And the sales role that I was in was, you know, paid great. So it was pretty hard to leave from that perspective. And, you know, I tried for many years to bring my desire to create more purpose and all that to that sales role. And I had many, many years of frustration and embarrassment and because the role didn't want it. Right. So it wasn't a good fit. And when I was younger, I thought, oh, there's something really wrong with this role. And I just realized, you know, one of these gifts of aging again. There's nothing wrong with the role. It just wasn't my role, but I stayed in it, right? So thank God I got so sick, got knocked upside the head by the universe or however we want to think about that. And I got on my path. And I'll just say that there was two big realizations that came for me. You know, everybody asked me, they're like, did you go into the light? Did you see the light, man? And I have to be honest, I didn't see the light. I remember when they were punching me in the face and screaming at me to hang on. Like, I remember being like, I don't know, a mile below the surface inside of myself and saying to myself, like, there's nothing to hold on to in here. I don't know what you people are talking about. I remember that piece. But what I ended up seeing was there were two big revelations. One is, if I had died that day, relative to my daughters and as a father, I actually was at peace because I had, to that point, already journaled perhaps 100. No, I was actually several hundred pages for each girl. As a sales guy, I'd been working out of my house for my entire career. So I had spent, you know, all those early years together as much as I could. And so I would not have been happy, obviously, about dying, but I wouldn't have been like, oh my God, I didn't, right? That part was actually really good. But that was it. Like the rest of it was just like, oh my God, I haven't even begun to start. And it was an understanding where, as a younger person, you know, you read about purpose. I read about purpose. I would think about these things. It all felt important. And yet, you know, we've got our health and we're like, I'll get to it. I'll get to it. You know, nose down. I got to do this. I got to do that. We, you know, a lot of us do that. And so this moment, I was finally able to just be like, it doesn't matter. I don't care how much my, you know, they want to keep paying me. I have got to get on this piece. And I'm glad that's where I'm at.
Wow. That's such a powerful story. Thank you for sharing. Of course, I've had guests on my show that have been through very difficult situations. Some are near death, others are more personal struggles. And it's very eye-opening to have to think about your last day and what that looks like and the regrets that we may have, right? And I think it was Les Brown, who's a motivational speaker, who said, if we're not on this earth every day living out our purpose and doing everything we can to fulfill our dreams, we will be that person lying in our deathbed having regrets, and there will be ghosts on our side of the bed and say, why didn't you leverage this talent or ability you had to bring yourself more alive? Now we have to carry that to the grave with us, and we are upset. We will be upset. And it really is what he's trying to say there is that we have these talents and abilities that can really bring out the best in ourselves. And if we use it and apply it in the physical world, we can make an impact, a change in someone's life for the better. And so I love the fact that you're now on this journey of fulfillment, is what I would say, really being in the zone or focused in your life's mission and leveraging your talents and abilities to help people to reach their own potential as well as find their own purpose. So very happy.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I love it. I had to get sort of okay. There was some inner work. It felt weird for a while to be like, why does it feel purposeful to me? That all I want to do is talk about purpose. Like, that didn't seem like it was enough, you know? But over time, I was just like, I surrendered to it. I was like, it's just what I want to do. I'm not going to apologize for it anymore. I'm just going to get really good at it, you know? And what I mean by that is, I think I always look at purpose kind of unfolding in two big chunks. There's the suffering from the first chunk is that we think that we're called to something greater. We know there's something more for us. We start feeling those things. We long for, you know, either greater impact or more aliveness, these sorts of things. And it takes actually quite a number of experiences oftentimes to be able to really lock in, you know, a decent amount of one's truth. So now you're living from this place like, all right, I know what I want to do, right? The second half then, after we sort of have, you know, call it a healthy amount of clarity, but you don't need perfect clarity. I think the harder work is to now translate what our truth is into ways that make a difference for others. Because what I've seen from a purpose perspective is when we attain sort of, the sufficient level of clarity about our purpose, we're usually pretty excited, we're pretty animated, and we're also, as human beings, very egocentric. So we now immediately go into this mode of like, well, this is so amazing. The value is obvious to me. Everybody needs to have this thing that I think is so amazing because it's connected to my purpose. And we run around like forcing it on others. And then we go through this dip, right? Because the world then says to us one way or the other, like, no, we don't want that, or we don't need it like you're doing it. But wait a minute, it's my purpose. Why don't you just love it like I love it? And they're like, well, that's your purpose. You can love it. I don't have to love it as much as you love it. And so we have to really commit. I mean, that's the place where I feel like you really begin to commit, which is like, okay, how do I think about what my purpose is in a way that allows me to translate it, you know, more successfully to serve somebody else? And this is where I feel like values become really practical. If you go back to that engineer in me, like purpose, I feel like that's for the physicists, that's the theoretical stuff. And values have been sort of cliched a little bit in our society, but I still think if you're use them authentically, they're really powerful. So if we know our values, we can be a lot more conscious about applying those in the moment. I'll just give an example of that. So sure. One of the hangups that we often find is we get really attached to a particular way of serving, right? We know we need to serve. We know we want to be alive in our service. We find a form, and then we just work the crap out of that form. And then it'll work for some percentage of the people, but it's not going to work for everybody. And there's all kinds of advice that says, you know, just niche down and, you know, just accept, you know, your slice of where you're purposeful, which I don't think is bad advice, but think of it this way. So picture like an iceberg, and what you see above the surface, you know, is what's going on in the moment. So picture you're seeing somebody, you know, give a hug to somebody else. So the hug is above the surface, but below the surface, there's our purpose is driving us, however we want to think of it, but let's use value. Let's say if below the surface, if we could know it, that hug is being driven by somebody's value around kindness, right? So if we don't have a sense of our purpose, we don't have a sense of our values, we're going to just run around hugging everybody because we're really attached to that one way of doing it. And there's something about that one way of doing it that feels really good. So I'm going to be the world's biggest hugger and I'm just going to hug everybody else, right? And we come marching into work one day. Maybe our manager's like, whoa, what's going on here, right? This is an HR problem brewing pretty fast. So you call the individual in, you say, what's going on? Well, I just love this hugging. It's so cool. It's so great. But this manager, let's just say, has an idea how to listen for that value. And they ask a couple more questions. So this person who's just so excited about hugging, and they say, you know, it sounds like it's kindness that's really at the heart of this hugging for you. And this heart goes, that's exactly it. That's right. It is kindness. So now this manager, I mean, we're sort of kind of got a little leadership lesson here, can say, let me ask you something. You think it would be kind to hug somebody, right? That's got a history of abuse or some sort of trauma, doesn't want to be touched, right? So now the hugger, because you brought them, you know, to a greater sense of their own purpose, their own values, they go, oh, no, that wouldn't be kind. And they have this momentary deflation because they're like, but I'm the hugger. But then you just say to them, well, now that you know it's kindness, right? Is a hug the only way to express kindness? And they're like, well, no, right. What can you do? I could buy them lunch. I could hold the door. You know, I could get them a card. I could do this, take them to a show. So there's all this freedom that opens up, in my opinion, the greater we can know our purpose. So part of my excitement for being with you here today is I love what you're doing. I love what you're sharing. Because the more we understand it, the more we can distill it down into a universal sense, the more freedom we have. Mm-hmm. You know, so stage one is like, I know I love to hug. I love to hug. Well, then what do you do when COVID comes along? How do you do your purpose if you think you're the hugger and COVID's here and you can't hug anybody? What COVID has done for you, the gift of it is it's forced you to think more deeply about why that hug matters so much. What's the reason that hug's so important? So that you can get to kindness, so that now you can practice kindness across an array of settings, not just when somebody wants a hug, right? And that's where I really feel like the deeper work is in translating, right? To know that kindness is driving me, as an example. And then how do I convert that into either a hug, you know, or a gift card or some other gesture that actually serves the other person? It's not just that I like doing it. You know, imagine getting a hug from somebody that's very alive in the hug and you don't want the hug. That's not serving. So anyway, I talk a long time. I'll be quiet.
Well, I love that example. Thank you for sharing it. You bring up some really good points. I think one I want to touch on is self-awareness and the ability to read people. And for me, I have a psychology background, so, and I've been working in the space of HR for quite some time, so I know how to read people accurately. But for someone who doesn't have that training and experience, and they're just going out hugging people, like, how do you get people to develop the self-awareness, one, and then two, the ability to read people so that they don't offend them? So in the example that you gave, this person's value is kindness and he or she shows it by hugging people.
Right.
There's definitely some lack of awareness there. And so how do you get people to increase their self-awareness and also equip them with the ability to read people or understand them before, you know, applying some sort of value?
Yeah. Well, the truth is, or my view of the truth is that, you know, the hugger, right, is going to have to go through that, the bumpy chapter of, you know, hugging people to the point where they're like, we don't, please stop it. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to like be upset, you know, for some period of time. They're going to feel resentment. They'll probably give away their sense of purpose for a while, right? Because the environment said, oh, we don't like that. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that desire for kindness is still in their heart, even if the world says, don't hug me. And it's going to keep pushing on them from the inside. And so I don't feel like I can, it's pretty rare that we can anybody really proactively give somebody advice on that. But when they're in the suffering of, I feel driven to hug people and I just don't understand why I'm not being received for the love that's in my heart when I do this, like in that like frustration, then there's an openness to begin to help them see differently. Mm-hmm. But you know, like this Les Brown that you referred to earlier, who I think is pretty awesome. You know, one of the things I think has been interesting about life is that when he says, I feel like the quote you shared was something to the effect of like, there's this caffeinated extroverted, like you're just cranking, you're making the most of the day. And then that's what purpose looks like. And I'm like, well, I think it does for extroverts, or at least some extroverts, but that's not how it looks for everybody. And it's in our suffering and our struggles, which in the moment oftentimes look anything but purposeful, that we're actually building our authority for purpose. You know, so I wouldn't want anybody on this show to feel like, you know, if I'm not just on stage and all lit up like all the time, like I'm doing something wrong. I feel like it's where we fall down and where we choose to get back up that we can now begin to witness, you know, what that struggle was like. And it's in witnessing oftentimes that we do our best serving. Mm. Right. You know, it's in the, I got to tell everybody, man, it's been hard as hell to get a sense of what my purpose is, or it took me forever to figure out that it wasn't the hug. It was the kindness. Like it's that when you share that with people, you're really serving. You're waking them up to what the real journey looks like, mm-hmm. You know? So I think what I've seen in my life is I can tell you when I was 20 or 30, I would have thought I was off my purpose. I would have thought in some of the different chapters that I wasn't doing a good job, I wasn't tracking. But now that I'm 50, I'm like, I was exactly where I was supposed to be. I was in some yucky stuff, but it was actually part of my training. It was part of my, you know, my learning, my education. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I couldn't imagine being here today without those struggles.
Right.
You know, so like, I'll just say, I use sailing. Not that I'm a sailor, but I use the metaphor of tacking. So I have some friends who are sailors, and they illuminated for me that, you know, when you're trying to go into the wind, you know, sailboat, you have to kind of go back and forth like this zigzag. So if you're watching a boat from the shore and you don't know what tacking is, you think, well, they're drunk or something, right? Like they were going that way, now they're going this way, now they're going that way. And we do that in our life. We have this tacking. And when we're younger, we haven't tacked quite enough times to be able to see what that center line is that we're really going back and forth across, you know? And so some of those early tacks, we think, I'm failing, I'm a fool, I don't know why I did this, I don't know what the reason is. And then I'm like, well, you know, you probably see some cool stuff. You gotta have some patience. And now I'm seeing all of my tacks, they all added up, and I would never have guessed it. So, you know, if we got young people listening to this, you know, there's aging isn't all bad. You get some cool stuff as it goes along.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast recently, and I can't remember the name of the guy that works at, or I don't know if he still does, works at Airbnb, but he's brought the company to massive success, and he's approaching the late stages of his life, and he's saying aging, he's trying to make aging cool. And yeah, there are ways that he goes about sharing that. But at the end of the day, the conversation I took from that podcast was, it's really about the story that you tell yourself. And if we believe that aging isn't cool, then it's not going to be cool, right? And so, I guess it goes back to the whole like self-awareness, you know, like how can we live our authentic truth and tap into our North Star and be purposeful and driven in the areas of fulfillment and happiness by having more self-awareness. And I think part of what I'm hearing from you is reflection is a tool that we can use to think about our past experiences and how can we improve to be better. Also reflect on what are our interests and values and how does that tie into our purpose. Mm-hmm. And really realizing that everyone is unique in their own way and that what is purposeful for someone isn't purposeful for me. So again, going back to that notion that everybody is different and unique and special in their own right. And so is really getting the tools and the knowledge and even life experiences to really form a concept of meaning for ourselves so that that way we can really be on this journey to live out our most realness. And my next question here is, obviously you have your own business and you're what I would consider an entrepreneur. What led you up to that? And what has that journey been like?
Oh, that's great. I've always had some entrepreneurial, I'm not exactly sure how to describe myself. So I've always been like 100% commission. So I've always had to hustle, had to innovate, you know, and find ways to get it done. And I thought of myself as pretty solidly an entrepreneur, but that was while working, you know, as a commissioned sales guy. Now that I've, you know, started my own business, there's a much deeper sense of what it means to be an entrepreneur. I just feel, you know, again, everybody's different. We got to learn to trust our own truth and really be okay with that. And for me, I wanted to create new ways of thinking about purpose and you know, leadership, for example, and just how to connect with the potential in ourselves and in others. You know, I think I could have done similar work and maybe got certified in somebody else's view of the moment, but for me, right? Because I think it's great when people do that. But for me, it was like, no, I think I'm really called to create something new. And so, you know, having my own business didn't even seem like it was an option after the near death. Like it was like, that's the only way forward, is because you know, I got my ear to the tracks, if you will, the tracks being within my heart, like I'm listening. Okay, how do I, you know, how do I birth this thing that's wanting to come through me? So definitely I'm not here to counsel anybody to make any big jumps into entrepreneurship. Following the heart, I think is what it's all about. But I also don't, you know, I think Hollywood or however you want to think of this, we've really been given these definitions that it's just such a, the only way to do it is with like great flair and great drama and, you know, always just I think there's very pragmatic ways to ease into getting greater and greater fixes for what feels purposeful for you. If entrepreneurial fits, great, but it can be really intense and really distracting for certain temperaments. So I don't necessarily blanket recommend it.
Yeah, so of course, the statistics show that 10 or 100 companies start and fail within the first year or something like that. So it's definitely can be scary for some people. It can be exciting for others. How do you navigate through all of those wide range of emotions as you're forming, developing, sustaining this business? Because it's hard. You have to be your own marketer. You have to, you know, create your own content. Maybe perhaps get your own clients. You know, for someone who doesn't have, you know, a lot of money to the business. So, and what keeps you, like, what are some of the things that keeps you sane? Like, do you work out, meditate? Like, share with us some of those advice.
Yeah, I'm definitely an athlete. So and as I've gotten older, I've been humbled to realize how much of my stress I was treating through exercise. Early understandings of self were like, you know, I'm just a really disciplined guy that likes to go hard and I can, you know, suffer on the bike and there's something virtuous about that. And I've come to learn like that suffering was there because I was pissed off about something and I pushed it through the pedals is all I did. But you know, I actually think to realize that that's what I was really doing is adorable. Like, you know, that's totally fine. Like, okay, that's where I was at. So exercise is big for the stress, the swings. If anybody, I mean, I don't know how far we want to go in it, but like, if anybody wants to become an entrepreneur, start their own business, you got to be totally ready for the swings. And those swings can be hour to hour, day to day. It's amazing. That's been really interesting. What I would say is make sure you got a lot of runway. I've not met any entrepreneur at this point that where it hasn't taken 2, 3, 4 times longer than they really thought it should have. You just, you know, definitely ease into it. You know, at least for some of these more, like my work is like really purposeful, really meaningful, but it's not like I'm building a lawnmower, you know, or an Xbox, or what is the VR headset or something that's really concrete that you can touch. So for the experiences when you're selling those things, I think it takes longer for people to begin to see the value and to give yourself that space. I'll tell you the biggest lesson I learned in the last 2 years that you hear all the time in one sense is to believe in yourself. And that has been really wild to experience the truth of that, to keep trusting that the thing that I'm doing, you know, is for a good reason. I'm here to serve. And that belief, it makes all the difference in those tougher days or whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe the other thing I'd say is like, it's funny. We want to build business. We, all these things that we're doing, this is the other thing that if you step back from it enough, it's all, everything's about purpose. Literally everything. I mean, every job we take, what we don't typically see is that our jobs are just vehicles for expressing our purpose. This podcast is a vehicle for expressing your purpose. You know, gardening is a way of doing it for somebody else, teaching for another, accounting. Like, I think we really, again, if we go back to that hug thing, one of the things that makes it so hard to realize ourselves is we're so attached to the form or the vehicle as opposed to the values or purpose that's wanting to come through that vehicle. You know, and what's kind of interesting about the purpose journey is like, if you really start to track your purpose, what you end up finding is that life at a certain point looks nothing like you thought it would. And yet you'll say to yourself, and yet I'm exactly where I need to be. Like, I live in Minneapolis now. I can't say enough great things about the time we spent in San Francisco and what a paradise that was as a cyclist and all these different things. I thought I was going to be there forever, right? And I just got done saying, you know, you got to make sure you got enough runway. So I said, well, this business I want to start probably is going to be harder to do with this cost structure of San Francisco. So let's go to a lower cost of living where I don't have to compromise on my vision. So we're now in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And there's a small piece of my ego or just the joy of those hills in San Francisco that's like, I can't believe I'm in the Midwest. This doesn't look like anything that I would imagine for myself. And yet I'm exactly where I need to be. And I know it, mm-hmm. you know? And so we have to, you know, purpose in one way to think of it is like, it's this process of making whatever it is that wants to come through us more important than any particular way of it coming through us. It's you know, saying the hug is great, but whatever it is that I'm trying to do through the hug is more important than doing it through the hug. Mm-hmm. I want to know what that thing is. And the more I can know what that thing is, then I'm not dependent on the hug, mm-hmm. you know? And so this is why our journeys look different over time, is because we end up making our values or our purpose more important than maybe the first or second or third ways we think that they should be expressed. Mm-hmm. And there's a movie that I love to always cite, which is The Karate Kid. Right? This is a classic movie for a lot of people. I don't know if folks still know about it anymore, but you know, Daniel Caruso is this guy getting beat up. He sees Mr. Miyagi, the teacher, you know, demonstrate some really amazing martial arts skills. And then he says, I want that, Mr. Miyagi, right? I want to do what you can do. So Mr. Miyagi's like, great. And then if we just take this moment and we think about, well, what do you think Daniel was picturing at that moment? Like, what's it going to be like to become the martial artist like Mr. Miyagi? And he's probably thinking of, you know, America's Next Best Ninja or breaking some boards or whatever, you know, the really cool, sexy stuff. And here he's painting a fence, he's waxing cars. And what I love about that movie is when we start to make that point within us, this vision within us, this purpose part of ourselves more important than any particular way, it ends up looking different than we would ever imagine. And the movie, I think, is successful because it's speaking to that truth, right? So Daniel, at the end of the movie, is the man that he wanted to be, or he was much closer to that version of himself. And the way he got there wouldn't look anything like he would have predicted, right? And I think the same is true for us as we follow our own, you know, truth inside.
Yeah, that's such a great point. Thank you for sharing that. I think what I'm getting from you is that we have to be adaptable to life and flexible. And there's so many changes throughout our lives, and we have to ensure that we have the right skills to cope with those changes. And whether that is turning to a loved one and having a conversation about these challenges, or listening to podcasts like this one to continue taking in these valuable content to hopefully apply it in our own lives and cope with that change. And so I love your just that point. We are about that time. What other advice would you give my listeners?
All right. The thing that comes to mind is, you know, I was introduced to you not too long ago by another person that you had on your show. And in my prep for today, I was noticing like you have a lot of shows, which I think is incredible. And I would invite anybody listening to this to just take a moment and just look on Spotify, look wherever, like, oh my gosh, Kong has done this. Something is really driving this guy. I mean, it's obvious, right? Why would you create all these shows, right? If there wasn't a reason. And so I think one of the gifts that you bring to the world is this, you know, clear demonstration that something is wanting to come through you into this world for the sake of others. It's centered on purpose. They each have their own thing. They don't have to be podcasters, but by virtue of all this catalog, this library, this body of work that you created, you're actually reinforcing your message by basically telling us, you know, look at me, I'm doing it right now. This thing is driving me. I'm gonna do you can do another one next week. You can find another guest, you know, so just to be curious about their own drivenness, not driven in like a type A perspective, but what are the patterns for you? What are you always doing? And one of the questions I love to ask is like, if friends and family are here, you know, what would they say you're always doing? And typically we get, you know, kind of chastised by friends and family for our patterns. But whenever we're always doing something, I see that as a value wanting to come through in the moment, right? So our alwaysness is a great clue. Our aliveness is a great thing to unpack. If you start to inventory experiences that have felt really good for you, you know, like this mentorship or this work role or just whatever, this weekend somewhere with a group of people, whatever the things that have felt best for you, make a list of them and then go back with this iceberg kind of mindset and be like, all right, whatever I'm listing is above the surface and there's something going on below the surface. And the thing that I know right now connects all these is that all these experiences felt good. We can at least lock that in, but begin to be curious. What's the, because you'll probably find like there's connection or something like that. Or maybe you're teaching in all of these things as part of your example. You begin to see the pattern to where now the particulars aren't so distracting, right? Everything looks different above the surface, but when you start really looking at below the surface in that iceberg metaphor, you're like, oh my God, I'm doing this over and over and over again. It just looks a little different each time. And it's important to be able to see the pattern. So purpose to me, as we start to wrap here, is totally about patterns. They are symbiotic. Our patterns will lead us to our purpose.
I love that. Thank you for sharing. Dan, where can people find you in your work should they choose to connect with you?
Yeah. LinkedIn, it's a great place. So you can just look me up on LinkedIn, last name, N-E-I-T-Z. My business is CORE, that's Latin for heart. And the URL for my website is www.workthecore, no E, it's not your abs, .com. So workthecore.com. And yeah, if anybody has a question or wants to just connect, I do classes, I do individual coaching, you know, I speak for teams and businesses, and I'm very alive in the subject. This is all I do is think about these things all day long.
That's great. Yeah, you're definitely a purpose-driven person. And of course, the show is really producing content to get people to talk about these things on a regular basis. And oftentimes they can be deep and meaningful and impactful. But I want to be able to bring it out so that people can really have it as a daily discussion. And our time on Earth here is short, and we have to realize that there's a lot of gifts we have created by our creator. You call it God, the universe, Allah. We have to leverage these gifts and bring it out to the world. And with that, I want to thank you for your existence and sharing your gift with us and your knowledge and wisdom. It's been such a pleasure having you on this podcast, talking about purpose and meaning and how that shows up in your life. So thank you for all that you do.
Thanks, Colin. This has been fun. I really appreciate the chance to share here.
Awesome.